Hi, I'm Pam Mabry, and welcome to Break Free. Break Free is a podcast dedicated to men and women who need to break the cycle in their lives that's preventing them from moving forward.
Hello, Candace May.
Hi, Pamela. So happy to be here.
I'm so glad you are here. I am so thrilled to death because the past few days I've been reading your book, Heaven Within. And honestly, it has, it changed me inside. It really made me look within. And which is part of the reason why you're here, because I want to share what you have to offer, because I think that it's life-changing. Without a doubt, your book is life-changing.
Thanks.
So the title of the book is Heaven Within.
Yeah.
Tell me, before we even get into anything, what is the purpose of this book and what is it that you want your readers to get from it?
So a lot of people look for heaven outside of themselves. I know growing up, I thought, I'm a physical being. If I die and I go to heaven, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And as I grew, I realized that I'm a spiritual being first and foremost, emotional and energy. And I have a physical body that I've been gifted with. It's kind of like a computer, kind of like it houses my spirit and takes care of all the physical needs while I'm here on this physical plane. But I'm not really designed for this physical plane per se, right? And so Heaven Within is coming to realize that just that there's more to life than the physical realm. There's more to life than the flesh here. There's more to life than the pain that we're in constantly.
There's a part in your book, and it's probably within the first chapter, where you talk about we've been fed a big lie.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
We've been fed a big lie. We've been told, that we can do anything on our own. We can be a god in and of ourselves, that we can rule and reign, and we don't need anybody else. In fact, you should be independent and totally functioning on your own. That's a lie.
So that was one of the areas that really kind of touched me, because I feel the same way. I feel like there are so many messages that we get in the world that have taken us off the path of being dependent upon our creator.
Yeah.
And you put it into words so beautifully, because I could never have articulated that the way that you did. And I agree with that 100%. So I guess my big question is, what brought you to the truth?
Yeah, what brought me to the truth? I guess the Lord's Spirit moved me and brought me to the truth, because I did not grow up in a Christian home.
Right.
My mom did make us go to church every Sunday. We would walk. She didn't go with us.
Really? I wonder, what is that about? Does she believe and she just didn't have time for herself, or she just needed a church babysitter for a couple of hours? What do you think it was?
She needed a church babysitter.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Well, here's the thing. In the early years, I don't think my mom had a relationship with Jesus Christ. I'm not even sure, to be honest, when she died, if she truly accepted Jesus Christ as her Lord and Savior. But when she died at 85, about, she was going to church regularly. But she and I would have conversations, she in Michigan, me in California, over the phone. And I would talk to her about her faith and the importance of Jesus Christ. And she had said to me several times, I hear you, and like, I will consider it, but like, so I don't have a concrete definition that she accepted Christ as her Lord and Savior. I hope she did.
Yeah,
right.
Right.
I know she was exposed to it, but for a long time, she admitted she had not really taken that extra step.
Right.
But growing up, if she sent us the kids to walk to church,
mm-hmm.
two or three blocks down, and we would go to church, she had quiet time. And my dad was, if he was home, because he worked nights, he was home on the weekends. So that if she wanted any time with him at all, that would have been the time that she would have had to engage with my dad, right?
So the seeds were planted when you were going to church.
Right.
So that takes me to, I guess it's the elephant in the room for me, is the part of the book where you talk about when you and your family went camping.
I was six. That story is when I was about 6 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mom, we had an Apache pop-up camper, and my mom got it. She was a school teacher, so she had summers off, and she would take us camping every summer as a family. My dad never came with us because he took his vacations twice a year and went down to Georgia, where he had property where he grew up, and farmed the land. So he was never really available for our family camping. But one year, my mom said, we're going to go camping with your dad. And I was so excited because I always want to know why my dad never went with us. So we went camping with an organization my dad belonged to. Mm-hmm. And we got there, got the campground tent set up and all. And then about nightfall, just before dinner, my uncle pulled in. Actually, the first night, he pulled in the middle of the night. I woke up and found him sleeping in the back of his truck. He had a camper on his truck.
Okay.
I was so excited. Uncle JM's here and everybody's here. By the evening, there were, you know, everybody set their campfires in their campgrounds. And we're sitting there marshing marshmallows at the campfire. And I looked around. I'm like, where's Dad? Where's Uncle JM? They're not here. Like, where are they? And then I started looking around at all the other campgrounds. And there were no men. It was just the moms and the children. And I'm like, where are all the men? So I snuck off because I'm curious that way and ran through the campground and going around trying to figure out where everybody was.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I found a huge group of, I don't know, 60 men or something in white garbs with hooded white garbs and a 12-foot cross ablaze on fire.
Did you know what it was?
Overwhelming. No, you're like, what is that? Like, oh my gosh, you know, that was quite alarming. So in my fear and chaos, I ran around trying to figure out what it was. And then I ran into the community room, how, you know, they have these big rooms that use as conference centers and stuff. And there were more men in there and they were all in white garbs. And I was just running around the table, like trying to figure out what was going on here. And one of the guys goes, whose baby girl is this? And I hear one of them say, Ellen's baby. And that was my dad, Luther Norman. He went by Ellen. And I was like, what? And so then, of course, I ran back to the campground. And I never had answers at that point, like totally freaked out. But I remember the voices.
So
does that make any sense at all?
It does. I mean, so, but basically you found out that your dad was a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yes.
And at what age did you realize what the Ku Klux Klan represented?
I don't know. I don't know what age I was when I knew what it represented, but I knew it wasn't good right there from age six, right?
Right.
I think it became a conversation shortly thereafter because I brought it up to my mom. What is this? What's going on? And I don't ever want to go back there. So we never went again. She just wanted to take us because I always wanted to know why my dad wasn't around or why we couldn't do things together. And so she brought us. And then I said, I don't want to go again. And I found out my oldest sister, she didn't come with us. She refused to go camping that weekend. So mm-hmm. She stayed home. She was she's about 8 years older than me.
Okay.
So she was a teenager. And so she stayed home. And she said that the FBI came to our house that weekend and they wanted answers. Where's your parents? Where's your dad? And blah, blah, blah.
Interesting.
And of course, that's because there were things that were being done and the FBI put people on their watch list, right? They have a watch list.
Of course.
Yeah.
So was that a conversation in your home about your dad's belief system as far as, I guess, white people were concerned? I would think that because I don't know anyone that's within the Ku Klux Klan. I know what they represent, but I've always wondered, you know, especially children who have parents that were a part of something like that and how it's passed on from one generation to the next. What was the typical conversation in your home about other races?
Oh, my dad was very strong about any drop of blood that wasn't white, even one drop of blood, may do not okay. It wasn't okay, right? You had to be 100% white blood. That was his thing. And if you were white and you had long hair, you were a long-haired puker, right? I mean, it was not okay. I mean, right. He was very rigid in what was okay, right?
Yeah.
And he, I remember him having rants of biased opinions of people and races and how they were not equal or not okay. And I would just sit there and get angry, and I would fight him over the dinner table and say, that's not true. That's not true. And no, that's not true. My siblings would say, stop fighting with him. I'm like, no, I'm not going to stop fighting with him. This is important. And they said, no, just agree with him. He'll stop fighting. He's just pushing you. And I go, no, because if I do say I agree with him, I change who I am on the inside. And people, it's not okay to judge people or treat them differently because of the color of their skin or their nationality. People were made in the image of God, and that's it. You know, we're all equal. And I stand by that today. I mean, I'm just, it was extremely shocking, because I realized, and I don't even know how I knew all of that, but I did. I knew if I agreed with him at any level, it would somehow change me. And as I think about it now, it's the power of words. Words have power.
They do. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And if I agree with you, knowing that it's something that's a lie, then something happens when those words are spoken.
Absolutely. It does. I agree. And you were, what, about 12 at this age, at this point, when you were arguing back with your dad about this? How old were you, would you say?
Maybe 14.
Maybe 14.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe.
Oh, your siblings maybe were 14, older.
15, 16. Yeah. Right. And the ones that the day that I'm recalling that they had that conversation with me, he had already separated, divorced from my mom. So I was a teenager at that point.
Okay.
So because they separated when I was about 14. So I was probably about 14, 15.
So 16. You were different. You were different than everyone else.
Yeah. They used to, well, I was different in many ways. I have this bright red hair, and my oldest brother had red hair almost, but it was almost blonde. And the rest had dark hair. And my son, my brother Lowell was a towhead. He'd go pure white in the summer and then dark in the winter.
Interesting.
And yeah. And everybody else had dark hair. And I was treated differently. My siblings treated me differently. They told me I was adopted. I was found in the hollow tree. You know, it was, you know, I'd rather be dead than have red on my head. It was like, I was treated differently. And I had different expectations. I believed that I could earn anything I wanted or get whatever I wanted.
Hmm.
And so, they thought I was always spoiled because I had things that they never had. Right. But, you know, remember, my mom was back in college when she was pregnant with me. So now we had two incomes coming into the house.
Right, right. Well, things were different for you than it was for them.
Completely different. My mom moved into a brand new home. My mom and dad moved into a brand new tract home when she was pregnant with me. I was born into a brand new home, and my siblings, you know, they lived in other conditions, in rental homes and smaller little. So I was treated differently than them. There was more income than them. I was youngest of five. So, right. You know, when your first child comes, you're pretty protective and you don't know what's going on. Maybe you don't have as much money. You're struggling through. By the time you get a few years under your belt with kids, you're not as frantic. You're not as.
Right. That's right. That's so, very true. Yeah. Yeah. When your mom went back to school and became educated, I think she went back to get her master's, and she had traveled the world. She had been to Africa, Europe, and all these different places. And she had a friend who was an African-American, and this friend was educated and poised and all of that. And this is someone Gloria. That met. This is what really touched my heart, because it made me realize how important education is. And education doesn't have to come by means of books. It can come by travel, by exposure. Yeah. And the fact that you saw another race that didn't fit the stereotype.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. She was beautiful. She lived in Chicago and in a beautiful, she was in a high rise. She had the penthouse at the top and it was a beautiful loft. She dressed so stylish. She was an educated woman. She had a doctorate degree. And
this is like around what year would you say? Well,
I don't know. I was born in 63 and I had to be, again, I was a teenager at that time, probably 14-ish.
So early 80s?
And like even 12. 70s. Probably late 70s, I guess it'd be late 70s. So I might have been, I was probably still even in junior high. So maybe, yeah, very.
Well, that, yeah. And I bring that up just because that's kind of, that was a rare thing, even in the 70s to find, I mean, how many African-Americans then had their doctorate? Now it's a whole different story. But
yeah,
you know, all of that just started in the 60s. So for, yeah, her, you know what I mean? So this was a period where she was actually breaking glass ceilings.
Yes.
Woman, whoever, yes, she was. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. You're right. She was. And my mom wanted me to meet her and took me with her on her trip to Chicago to meet her. And phenomenal woman. Mm. Absolutely lovely. But my dad was so biased and so hateful. In that regard, we had a party one year, a New Year's party, and everybody invited people. And somebody brought a friend with them. I don't remember who it was, but it was a Black gentleman they brought. And my dad got really angry. And I remember him making a big scene about Smiley, this guy. He gave this guy his name, Smiley. And you can imagine why, dark skin, white, yeah, teeth.
Right. Yeah.
So it was rude. Yeah. And he was like laying into my mom that she brought Smiley here. You know, it's a boyfriend or what the heck, you know. And so they had to leave. But it was ugly. It was ugly and so uncalled for. But to see that contrast.
I can see very clearly how God's hand was in your life, even as before you were born. I can see it. I can see how, you know, the things that your mother was going through at the time that she was pregnant with you, how she decided to change her life. She decided to go back to school. She decided to make something of herself, because during that period of time, women weren't even really working. They were at home with their children. And she decided to rise above that while she was pregnant with you. So not only was there a change of consciousness within your mom, think about, you know, what you were being born into, you know, and then she went back to get her master's degree. So she not only got her education, she went back to even get more educated. Then she traveled on top of that. So she not only educated herself through the books, she educated herself through travel and exposure to different cultures. And you, my dear, were the recipient of that. And that is why you are here today talking about a book about heaven within, because you were in the midst of two different worlds. One was a world of bigotry and one was a world of hope.
Amen to that.
Yes. And you, my dear, have written a book that leans more toward the hope, that even though there may be all kinds of crazy things going on in your life, Dad and the Ku Klux Klan, all the bigotry and things that took place. And there's so much more in your book that you talk about, things that took place that shaped who you are. But because of the foundation that God made sure that you were going to grow up in, you lean more toward the positive. And you're here to express that to other people, that despite, in spite of anything, there is hope if you lean towards God, because He is our hope.
He is our hope and our salvation and our foundation. And it's not what life gives you, it's how you respond to it that matters.
That, my dear, is a great closing statement. I'm going to end with that because I think that is what the book is really all about. And I can't wait for other people to be able to dive in and read about your life and how you've overcome so many different obstacles. And then you were only able to do that because of your faith and hope, and knowing that there's always God's hand in your life, no matter what. That is strategic. And nothing is allowed to happen to you, just like with Job in the Bible, unless he gives permission. And because you've surrendered your life to him, you have given God permission to take control of everything. And that is why you have overcome so many different things. And I think that's wonderful.
It's through that testing and all those trials that our faith is purified and strengthened.
Thank you so much, Candace May. I'm so glad you wrote the book. And I can't wait until it's released. Do you have a release date?
In June 2022.
And if someone wants to pre-order your book, where would they go?
We have a link. Can we post the link?
Yeah, absolutely. I will put the link up for sure.
Great.
Yeah. But for our audio audience, can you tell us, is it CandaceMay.com that it's on?
CandaceMay.com is my website, and that's Candace, CandaceMae.com. And you will find a reference to the book there under author speaker tab. Good. But if you go to Linktree, linktr.ee/CandaceMay, mm-hmm. that is a master list of all of my links, and you'll find everything about the book and so much more.
Wonderful.
You follow me there.
Thank you so much for your time, Candace May, and many blessings towards that book. I hope it touches thousands and thousands of lives
globally. That's what the Lord told me, that it's for the masses and that lives would be changed. And you will find your own stories in the process. So thank you for having me, Pamela.
You're very, very much welcome. Bye, Candace.
You've been listening to Break Free, a podcast dedicated to men and women who need to break the cycle in their lives that's preventing them from moving forward. And please support me by clicking either follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And thank you so much for listening. May God bless.